In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The first criminal trial of a former U.S. president, Donald Trump.
We did nothing wrong, just like I did nothing wrong in the other case.
March 2023, the state of New York formally charged Trump with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree.
Prosecutors say his one-time lawyer, Michael Cohen, paid porn star Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election to keep her quiet about an alleged sexual encounter with Trump.
I never directed him to do anything incorrect or wrong.
Mr. Trump directed me to use my own personal funds from a home equity line of credit to avoid any money being traced back to him.
It is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud. The defendant repeatedly made false statements on New York business records.
This is not a trial. This is not an act of criminality.
Donald Trump just arrived at the courthouse in Lower Manhattan for the start of his criminal trial here in New York City.
This is a slow newscast from Tortoise. Word for word, Trump on trial. It's Monday, April 22nd, the first day of evidence in The People versus Donald Trump. What follows is voiced up from the first week of transcripts.
I will now ask the people to deliver their opening statement. People?
Good morning, Your Honor, counsel, members of the jury.
That is Prosecutor Michael Colangelo, a Manhattan lawyer with previous experience taking on Donald Trump when he worked for New York State's Attorney General.
This case is about a criminal conspiracy and a cover-up. The defendant, Donald Trump, orchestrated a criminal scheme to corrupt the 2016 presidential election. Then he covered up that criminal conspiracy by lying in his New York business records over and over and over again. In June of 2015, Donald Trump announced his candidacy for president in the 2016 election. A few months later, this conspiracy began. He invited his friend, David Pecker, to a meeting at Trump Tower here in Manhattan. Mr. Pecker was the CEO of a media company that, among other things, owned and published the National Enquirer tabloid. Michael Cohen was also at that meeting. He worked for the defendant as the defendant's special counsel at his company, the Trump Organization. And those three men formed a conspiracy at that meeting to influence the presidential election by concealing negative information about Mr. Trump in order to help him get elected. It was a core part of this conspiracy that the co-conspirators then executed through three different transactions over the course of the next year. They used a practice called catch and kill. Catch and kill is when the tabloid buys up damaging information about someone, demands that the source sign a non-disclosure agreement to prevent them from taking that information or that story anywhere else, and then the tabloid declines to publish the story to prevent it from ever seeing the light of day. So it's a way of buying damaging information not to publish it, but to hide it, make it go away, and in this case, to help the candidate. As one part of that agreement, Michael Cohen paid $130,000 to an adult film actress named Stormy Daniels just a couple of weeks before the 2016 election to silence her and to make sure the public did not learn of the sexual encounter with the defendant. Cohen made that payment at the defendant's direction, and he did it to influence the presidential election. 2 weeks before the presidential election, on the morning of October 26, 2016, Cohen made two phone calls to the defendant to confirm that he was finalizing the arrangements. You will see the telephone records of those calls. Then Cohen walked across the street. He opened a bank account in the name of a new shell company called Essential Consultants LLC, which he had created to carry out the Stormy Daniels payoff. He then transferred $131,000 from the home equity line of credit on his own home into the shell company's bank account. And the next day, Cohen wired $130,000 to Stormy Daniels' lawyer to keep her quiet. And as part of their efforts to try to keep the entire scheme under wraps, Cohen gave false information to the banks about the shell company's business purpose in the account opening forms he was required to complete and in the wire transfer records that he filled out describing the purpose of the $130,000 payment. Cohen made that payment at Donald Trump's direction and for his benefit, and he did it with the specific goal of influencing the outcome of the election. Now look, no politician wants bad press, but the evidence at trial will show that this was not spin or communication strategy. This was a planned, coordinated, long-running conspiracy to influence the 2016 election, to help Donald Trump get elected through illegal expenditures, to silence people who had something bad to say about his behavior, using doctored corporate records and bank forms to conceal those payments along the way. It was election fraud, pure and simple. We will never know, and it doesn't matter if this conspiracy was the difference maker in a close election. But you will see evidence in the defendant's own words, from his social media posts, from his speeches at campaign rallies and other events. You will see in his own words making crystal clear that he was certainly concerned about how all of this could hurt his standing with voters and with female voters in particular. At the end of the case, we are confident that you will have no reasonable doubt that Donald Trump is guilty of falsifying business records with the intent to conceal an illegal conspiracy to undermine the integrity of a presidential election. And after all of that evidence is in, we'll have a chance to speak with you again during closing arguments. My colleague Joshua Steinglass will go through all of that evidence and explain that it inescapably leads to only one conclusion. Donald Trump is guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree.
Thank you, Mr. Colangelo. Counsel, good morning.
Good morning. President Trump is innocent.
And for the defense, that's Todd Blanche, a former federal prosecutor.
President Trump did not commit any crimes. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office should never have brought this case. You've heard this a few times already this morning, and you're going to hear it a lot more during this trial. The people, the government, they have the burden of proof to prove President Trump guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. What this means, as Judge Michon said a few minutes ago, is that President Trump is presumed innocent. He's cloaked in innocence. And that cloak of innocence does not leave President Trump today. It doesn't leave him at any day during this trial, and it won't leave him when you all deliberate. You will find that he is not guilty. Now, President Trump, you've seen him, of course, for years and years and years. You've seen him on television. You've seen photos of him. You've seen articles written about him. He's in some ways larger than life. But he's also here in this courtroom doing what any of us would do, defending himself. I have a spoiler alert. There is nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy. They put something sinister on this idea, as if it was a crime. You'll learn it's not. Michael Cohen paying Stormy Daniels or Stephanie Clifford $130,000 in exchange for her agreeing to not make false claims about President Trump is not illegal. I'm going to say that again. Entering into a non-disclosure agreement...
Objection. Sustained.
entering into a non-disclosure agreement is perfectly legal.
Objection.
Overruled.
You will learn that companies do that all the time with some regularity. Executives, people who are wealthy, people who are famous, enter into non-disclosure agreements regularly, and there's nothing illegal about it. I expect that you will learn that when Ms. Daniels threatened to go public with her false claim of a sexual encounter with President Trump, that it was, as the people just said, very close to the election. And it was almost an attempt by Ms. Clifford, Ms. Daniels, to extort President Trump.
Objection.
Sustained.
It was sinister. And it was an attempt to try to embarrass President Trump, to embarrass his family. Because, as the people alluded to, at that time there were all kinds of salacious allegations going around about President Trump, and it was damaging to him and damaging to his family. And you heard, and you will hear, during this trial, that President Trump fought back like he always does and like he's entitled to do, to protect his family, his reputation, and his brand. And that is not a crime. But unbeknownst to President Trump, in all the years that Mr. Cohen worked for him, Mr. Cohen was also a criminal. Apart from his work for President Trump and the Trump companies, he cheated on his taxes. He lied to banks. He lied about side businesses he had with taxi medallions, among other things. And as the people alluded to, in 2018, he got now, shortly after getting caught in 2018, you will learn that he made a decision. The decision that he made was to blame President Trump for virtually all of his problems caught. He had been eventually disbarred as an attorney. He's a convicted felon, and he also is a convicted perjurer. He is an admitted liar. For many, many years, going back before President Trump became president, even before Michael Cohen started working for the Trump Organization, you'll learn that Michael Cohen was obsessed with President Trump. He is obsessed with President Trump even to this day. Today, Michael Cohen has podcasts, two of them. He goes on TV, X, TikTok, other social media platforms, and he rants and he raves about President Trump. He criticizes President Trump. He has talked extensively about his desire to see President Trump go to prison. He has a goal, an obsession with getting Trump. You're going to hear that I submit to you that he cannot be trusted. Separately from his obsession with President Trump and his obsession to get President Trump, on multiple occasions, Mr. Cohen has testified under oath and lied.
Blanche continues, Michael Cohen is a liar, Stormy Daniels is a liar, the David Pecker testimony we're about to hear, nothing illegal there.
Now, I want to talk to you for just a few minutes about what the people spent a long time talking about, which is this catch-and-kill scheme between Mr. Pecker at AMI and President Trump and Michael Cohen as the part of his lawyer. The people use the word conspiracy. You will hear and see that there are 34 counts in this indictment. Conspiracy is not one of them. President Trump is not charged with any conspiracy. That's a word the people have chosen to use. The reality is there's nothing illegal about a scheme. There's nothing illegal about what you will hear happened among AMI and National Enquirer and Mr. Pecker and President Trump. And listen, use your common sense. We're New Yorkers. That's why we're here. You told all of us, you told the court, you told me that you would put aside whatever ideas you have of President Trump from the past 8 years, the fact that he was president, the fact that he is running again for an election this November. And we trust you to do that. We do. We trust that you're going to decide this case based upon the evidence that you hear in this courtroom and nothing else. And if you do that, there will be a very swift, not guilty verdict. Thank you.
The court breaks for lunch. Afterwards, we're introduced to witness number one, David Pecker.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pecker.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry to start with this question, but how old are you?
72.
Are you married?
Yes.
How long have you been married?
36 years.
Can you briefly describe your educational background for the jury?
Yes. I have a bachelor's degree from Pace University, and I also received a doctorate degree that was granted to me.
Pecker is the first of three crucial witnesses for the prosecution. The other two are Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen, both of whom will take the stand at a later date. The prosecution wants to introduce the idea of a conspiracy between Mr. Trump, Mr. Cohen, and the National Enquirer to buy up and kill stories that might have damaged Trump's presidential bid.
So, as CEO and president and chairman, did you have the final say over publishing decisions, including which stories would get published and which stories would not get published?
Yes, I had the final say.
What follows this is largely procedural. A back and forth over the admissibility of certain exhibits, polygraphs, etc. At the start of the second day, the prosecution argues that Donald Trump has breached a gag order put in place by the court, barring him from speaking publicly, or posting, about people in the trial. The prosecution argues that he'd breached the order, and they want him punished.
The defendant published a post on his Truth Social account that stated, "They are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge in order to get on the Trump jury."
That's the prosecution. The defense argues that reposting other people's opinions doesn't count. But the judge notices a problem. They're not all reposts. It gets terse.
So this is Exhibit 10. It was posted on April 17th at 5:46 p.m., and it says, in quotes, "They are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge in order to get on the Trump jury," closed quote. And then it's attributed to Jesse Waters. Is that, in fact, what Mr. Waters said?
Jesse Waters, by the way, is an American conservative commentator.
He said, "They are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge." And then, not at the time, I don't believe he said, "in order to get on the Trump jury."
Well, at the time that he reposted this, he had not said that?
Correct.
So your client manipulated what was said and put it in quotes, am I right?
It was. I wouldn't use the word manipulation, Your Honor, but the rest of the quote is not part of the quote.
Okay. My other question is, this is not a repost at all?
No.
No? This is something that was said on TV, and your client had to type it out. He had to sit there, use the quotation marks, the shift key, and type everything out, and then add those additional words. So your argument that these are reposts, and, therefore, they are not a violation, that does not apply to Exhibit Number 10, is it?
Number 10 is not a repost, agreed.
So what is your argument as to Exhibit 10?
Judge, the argument as to Exhibit 10, it's ambiguous whether this statement violates the gag order. President Trump voicing his view that there were liberal activists trying to get on this jury is not calling on a particular juror. It's not in any way trying to threaten or intimidate jurors. It just isn't, Your Honor. Just to say what it is, it's a post from Jesse Waters on April 17th. It appears I'm looking at one that said, 8:24 p.m., and it says, verbatim, the same thing that President Trump said on his Truth.
But that's 3 hours after your client's post.
Yes.
So it's irrelevant to that.
Well, it goes to...
There is no relevance to that. Do you have any case law that you want to hand up? Any other argument that you want to make to me at this time?
Yes. It's worth ending on this point, which is that this gag order, we are trying to comply with it. And there is no doubt that here are about 10 different purported violations. President Trump is being very careful to comply with Your Honor's rules. And...
Mr. Blanche, you are losing all credibility. I have to tell you that right now. You are losing all credibility with the court.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
David Pecker returns to continue his evidence. Prosecuting lawyer Josh Steinglass is asking the questions.
Are you personally familiar with Donald J. Trump?
Yes.
For how long have you known him?
Since the late 80s.
Do you see him today in the courtroom?
Yes, I do.
Would you please point him out, and would you please tell us something that he's wearing?
He's sitting here. He is wearing, I think it's a dark blue suit.
Pecker then discusses his role in the Trump campaign and one important meeting.
I received a call from Michael Cohen telling me that the boss wanted to see me. And that's how, when I spoke to Michael Cohen, that's how he would refer to Donald Trump as the boss.
What did you understand the purpose of the meeting to be before you actually got there?
Most of the time when I received a call from Michael Cohen, he wanted something. So I assumed that they were going to ask. I was going to be asked for something. I didn't know what it was before I got there.
Well, can you describe for the jury what happened at that meeting, please?
At that meeting, Donald Trump and Michael, they asked me what I can do and what my magazines could do to help the campaign. So thinking about it as I did previously, I said what I would do is I would run or publish positive stories about Mr. Trump, and I would publish negative stories about his opponents. And I said that I would also be the eyes and ears of your... I said I would be your eyes and ears because I know that the Trump organization had a very small staff. And then I said that anything that I hear in the marketplace... If I hear anything negative about yourself, or if I hear anything about women selling stories, I would notify Michael Cohen, as I did over the last several years. I would notify Michael Cohen, and then he would be able to have them not be published, or somebody would have to purchase them.
Purchase the negative stories about Mr. Trump so that they would not get published, you mean?
They would not get published, yes.
Pecker told his editors to watch out for scandalous stories about Donald Trump and to run negative stories about his rivals. In this instance, his rivals were three other candidates for the Republican presidential nomination, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Ben Carson.
I am displaying the first exhibit on page one. Does the headline say, Ted Cruz shamed by porn star?
That's correct.
And did you run an article with that headline in the National Enquirer?
Yes.
Do you remember anything about the history of this article in particular? This headline that states, Ted Cruz sex scandal, five secret mistresses.
I don't remember the details of it, but I remember the article.
Do you remember discussing it with Michael Cohen prior to its publication?
We would have discussed it, yes.
I'm going to show you one more from this exhibit. Top headline, Donald Trump blasts Ted Cruz's dad for photo with JFK assassin. Do you remember anything about the history behind this article?
Yes. Dylan Howard had the research department take a look at Ted Cruz's father's photos, and we matched the photos in every different picture with that of Lee Harvey Oswald, and we matched the two together. That's how that story was prepared and created.
Why were you running these stories about Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and Ben Carson?
After the Republican debates, and based on the success of some of the other candidates, I would receive a call from Michael Cohen, and he would direct me on which candidate and which direction we should go.
Pecker then goes into detail about two stories he purchased so that they wouldn't be published. The first involved a doorman at Trump Tower who claimed Donald Trump had fathered an illegitimate child.
So, you told us, and this makes it clear, that you paid, to use your phrase, the doorman $30,000. Is that a typical sum for a source?
No, it's not. A typical source payment can be anywhere from $250 to $5,000, or if it's a bigger celebrity, up to $10,000.
Why pay so much for this story?
I made the decision to buy the story because of the potential embarrassment it would have to the campaign and Mr. Trump.
He tells the court the doorman story ended up being false. But when Playboy model Karen McDougal claimed she'd had an affair with Donald Trump, David Pecker had one of his editors, Donald Howard, check out her story. And then Donald Trump said something that suggested to him that the story was true.
All right, jurors, we're going to go ahead and call it a day. As we discussed, before I excuse you, I remind you not to talk amongst yourselves or anyone else about anything related to the case. Please keep an open mind.
It's now Thursday, April 25th, day three. David Pecker is back on the stand, still being questioned by Joshua Steinglass for the prosecution.
I was at an investor's, at one of my largest investors' meeting in New Jersey, making a presentation and an update on our business. And the assistant in the office came into the conference room and said, "There's a call for you from Donald Trump." And I left and took the call.
And could you tell us about the conversation you had that day with Donald Trump?
Yes. When I got on the phone, Mr. Trump said to me, "I spoke to Michael. Karen is a nice girl. Is it true that a Mexican group is looking to buy her story for $8 million? I absolutely don't believe that there is a Mexican group out there to buy a story for $8 million. And then he said, "What do you think I should do?" I said, "I think you should buy the story and take it off the market."
He knew the story would damage the campaign. After conversations with Michael Cohen, Pecker paid Karen McDougal $150,000 for her story. He assumed Trump would pay for it. But McDougal's deal was unusual.
Dylan Howard gave me the following terms. To purchase the lifetime rights from Karen McDougal was going to cost $150,000. Plus, Karen wanted to restart her career. She wanted to write for the celebrity magazines. She wanted to be on the cover of some of the health and fitness titles. She had a major problem when her breast implants were removed, and she wanted to write some articles about that in Shape and in some of the other magazines. And she also wanted to launch a clothing line, a fitness clothing line, as well as a beauty product company. And she wanted to she wanted to be an anchor for the red carpet events with Radar magazine.
He then explains how these deals usually worked, using a specific example.
After he made that announcement, a number of women called up the National Enquirer about the stories that they had, that they have, to sell on different relationships or contacts and sexual harassment that they felt that Arnold Schwarzenegger did. And the deal that I had, the agreement, I should say, that I had with Arnold, is that they would call him and advise him of any stories that were out there. And I ended up buying them for a period of time. And then as he became governor, and one of the stories that I acquired, I wasn't going to publish, and the person who took that story, since we didn't publish it, she brought it to the Los Angeles Times, and the Los Angeles Times published the story. It was very embarrassing. Most of the press approached Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was governor about this story, and his comment was, "I didn't know," he said. "Ask my friend David Pecker."
Was your principal purpose in entering into the agreement with Karen McDougal to suppress her story as to prevent it from influencing the election?
Yes, it was.
As of 2016, were you aware that corporations, including AMI, are subject to federal campaign finance laws?
Yes, I was.
Were you aware that expenditures by corporations made for the purpose of influencing an election made in coordination with or at the request of a candidate are unlawful?
Yes.
Did you or AMI ever report to the Federal Election Commission in 2016 that AMI had made a $150,000 payment to Karen McDougal?
No, we did not.
Why did AMI make this purchase of Karen McDougal's story?
We purchased the story so it wouldn't be published by any other organization.
And why did you not want it to be published by any other organization?
We didn't want the story to embarrass Mr. Trump or embarrass or hurt the campaign.
But Pecker says there were limits to the help he was willing to give.
Who is Stormy Daniels?
Stormy Daniels is or was a porn star.
Have you ever met her in person?
No. I never did.
Did you communicate directly with Ms. Daniels ever?
I never did.
How did you come to learn of her in connection with this case?
I was having dinner with my wife and I received an urgent call from Dylan Howard.
Howard told Pecker that a lawyer wanted $120,000 for a story about Stormy Daniels having a sexual relationship with Donald Trump.
And how did you respond?
I said, we can't pay $120,000. I said, I don't want the National Enquirer to be associated with a porn star. I said that our largest distributor, our largest retailer, Walmart, this would be very bad for the magazine, very damaging for American media. I don't want any affiliation with it at all. We already paid $30,000 to the doorman. We paid $150,000 to Karen McDougal. And I am not a bank.
How, if at all, did Dylan Howard respond?
He said, okay, they need to handle it. Perhaps I should call Michael, advise him, and he could take it from there and handle it.
Who did you understand they to be referring to?
Michael Cohen and Donald Trump.
And how did you respond to that?
I said, yes, a good idea.
He recalls Michael Cohen asking him for help around November or December.
Michael said to me that he wasn't reimbursed for the monies that owed to him on the Stormy Daniels payment was number one. Number two, he said that bonuses for the Trump organization are normally paid out around Christmas time, and he hasn't received his bonus. He asked me to speak to Donald Trump to help Michael Cohen get his bonus.
What did you understand that to mean?
That Michael Cohen paid Stormy Daniels out of his own funds, which was the first time I heard of that.
And what did you understand him to be complaining about?
I understood that he was complaining that he has not been repaid.
At which point, Donald Trump walked into the room. David Pecker walked back to Trump's office with him to plead for Cohen's money.
So, Mr. Trump told me that, one, he says, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, Michael Cohen has multiple apartments in my buildings. I think he's got about 12 apartments in my buildings. He owns 50 taxi medallions, which are worth $1 million apiece. He said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it.
Mr. Trump said, don't worry about it. I'll take care?
Yes, that's correct.
The prosecution has one final line of questioning for Pecker. They want to ask about Pecker's first meeting with Donald Trump and his advisors after he won the election in 2016.
On that day when I went there, when I walked into his office, around his desk he had James Comey, Sean Spicer, Rince Priebus, and Michael Pompeo. And they were updating Mr. Trump, Fort Lauderdale shooting. And then Mr. Trump introduced me to each of them and he said, here is David Pecker. He's the owner, publisher of the National Enquirer. And he probably knows more than anyone else in this room. It was a joke. Unfortunately, they didn't laugh.
Then the advisors left, and Donald Trump expressed his gratitude to Pecker for his work.
So he said, I want to thank you for handling the McDougal situation. And then he said, I want to. He also said, I want to thank you for the doorman story, the doorman situation.
And what did you understand Mr. Trump to be thanking you for regarding the Karen McDougal story and the doorman story?
I felt that he was thanking me for buying them and not publishing any of the stories and helping the way I did.
And did he say why he was so appreciative?
He said that the stories could be very embarrassing.
What do you understand that to mean?
I felt that it was going to be very embarrassing to him, his family, and the campaign.
Now, did he ever say anything to you that made you think that this concern about these stories getting out was for his family rather than for his campaign?
I thought it was for the campaign.
After lunch, the prosecution walks David Pecker through the reason he's on the stand. He had been threatened with prosecution unless he gave evidence. Asked if he was still friends with Donald Trump, Pecker said yes. Next up, the defense.
Mr. Pecker, I represent President Trump.
That's former federal prosecutor Emil Beauvais.
You have also purchased a story related to Tiger Woods, right?
We didn't purchase. I should say, yes, it was a source agreement. So we did purchase it, yes.
And you purchased some photographs, right?
We purchased a story about Tiger Woods from a source, but all the investigating photographs, all the investigative works was done internally.
Beauvais wants to find previous examples of using the catch-and-kill strategy where it may have affected elections. So he settles on Ari Emanuel, a businessman and arguably the world's most influential celebrity agent. In the past, David Pecker has helped suppress negative stories for Emanuel clients like Mark Wahlberg.
Tell us which celebrities that work with Mr. Emanuel that you have helped suppress negative stories for.
A story on Mark Wahlberg?
What was the story about Mr. Wahlberg?
This is going back a while ago. He had an argument or with his wife.
But it wasn't just Ari Emanuel's clients that Pecker helped out. Emanuel's own brother was running for election.
And in this time frame, Rahm Emanuel had just left his position with President Obama, right?
Yes.
And he left that position to go campaign to be the mayor of Chicago, correct?
Correct.
And it was while his campaign was active at the time that Ari Emanuel reached out to you, right?
Yeah, yes.
And you did that in a manner that you believed was consistent with the policies and the procedures that you implemented after the incident with Mr. Schwarzenegger, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And there were no issues with the FEC following that?
No.
Beauvais continues to walk Pecker through various meetings. And then the day wraps up.
Jurors, we're going to stop at this time.
The next day, Friday, Emil Beauvais is trying to find errors and consistencies in David Pecker's testimony. And the prosecution is not happy.
Objection.
What's your objection?
He wasn't President Trump in 2016.
Sustained.
Beauvais questions David Pecker about his testimony that AMI, Pecker's company, had admitted to violating campaign finance law. It's a lot of technicalities back and forth. And the FEC is the Federal Election Commission.
Your position with the FEC was that you were completely truthful with your lawyers, right?
Yeah, yes.
And the attorneys argued to the FEC that that was part of the reason that you had not committed a campaign finance violation, correct?
Can you repeat that again, please?
You were represented by counsel in the FEC investigation, right?
Yes.
And so was AMI, right?
Yes.
And it was the same lawyers, correct?
Yes.
And they were making arguments on your behalf, right?
Yes.
And also on behalf of AMI, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And they were arguing to the FEC that you had not committed a campaign finance violation, correct?
Yes.
And you believed in 2021 that that was true, correct?
Yeah.
After Emil Beauvais is done for the defense, Josh Steinglass re-examines David Pecker, who confirms, again, that the Karen McDougal deal had violated federal election law. Pecker was the key witness for week one. He was followed by Rona Graff, who worked for Trump for 34 years, and by an accountant, Gary Faro. But the real news happens during the second week, on Wednesday, May 1st. Following the first week's warnings, the judge fines Donald Trump for violating the gag order 9 separate times, $1,000 for each offense. For now, that's just $9,000. but prison remains a possibility if he continues. The trial goes on. We will hear Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels, but not yet.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Step inside the Telegraph's newsroom with me, Camilla Tominey.
And me, Kamal Ahmed.
Join us every weekday for The Daily Tea.
A new podcast that brings you a frank and fearless take on today's headlines.
From politics and the big social debate.
To business, economics and sport.
Enjoy lively conversation with a healthy dose of humour.
And agenda-setting interviews with the people who make the news.
If you know your own mind, you'll like what's on ours.
Join us for The Daily Tea every weekday afternoon.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.